All right. I'll have to go by the Wailing Wall and pay homage when I leave. For those of you who are here but too young to remember the term, when I was here at the university, they used to post the grades on the wall. And they posted the grades by that way. Okay. They posted the grades by the last four digits of your Social Security number. And so after each exam period, we would all go to the Wailing Wall. And there was much wailing and gnashing of teeth at the Wailing Wall. So I always like to go by and pay homage to the Wailing Wall. I want to thank everyone who has had a hand in putting this conference together, because I know it has been a long time coming. And I want to especially thank the university for hosting us, and Professor Johnson for putting it together. And I don't see Manny out there, but this conference is the brainchild of our former chairman, Mr. Capsalis, who came up with this notion some years ago, and he got together a group of people who were willing to help him put this conference together and to start this dialogue and to promote this notion of diversity in the legal profession. And so we owe Manny a debt of gratitude. I think he will be here this weekend, and so if you get a chance to see him, you'll want to thank him for being the visionary and for following through on that vision. And of course, our current chair, Michael Hu Young, is here, and he's ably following in the path that Manny started and leading us to continue this dialogue. And then Clarence Dunneville is the point person for this particular leg of the conference. Clarence took this on as his committee assignment. And so we owe a big thank you to all of the folks who have worked so hard to make this day a reality and to get this conversation started. It is my pleasure to be a member of the Diversity Conference and to sit on that body and to help engage in the dialogue. And I'm excited about the program that has been put together for this weekend, because with the topics that you all will explore, we will all come away with a better idea, a better notion of the importance of diversity in the legal profession and what we can do, what each of us can do to improve that product. I'm going to speak with you a little bit this afternoon about my first love in the Diversity Conference. And nothing to you law students who are out there. No, I have nothing against each of you who are sitting there. And I applaud your being here and the efforts that you have made to get to where you want to go. But my first love and my audience of choice is not the adults, and it's not the law students, but my first love are the younger students, the middle school students and the elementary school students. I had a bit of pause when Professor Johnson asked me to come here and speak to this group, because you're not my first love. While I love you, you're not my first love. I often pick and choose the speeches that I will give to adults, because to some extent you have already charted your path. Those of you in law school, you've already charted your path, and while there are things that we can do and that we're willing to do to help your dreams become a reality, to me, the fertile ground, the most fertile ground for increasing diversity in our profession is to start the conversation at the elementary school level and at the middle school level, because it's there that young minds are beginning to be molded, and it's there where young minds are just starting to think about, what do I want to be when I grow up? And it's there that I think we have a wonderful opportunity to make an impact and to make a difference. And so when I'm called to speak to adults, I'll sometimes say yes and I'll sometimes say no. But when I'm called to speak to elementary school children, my only question is, where is it and when do you want me to be there? Because I love to speak to the young children. And I will admit to them when I walk into the room that my motivation for being there is perfectly and purely selfish. And I will tell them that it's selfish because I'm in the room talking to them, whether it's a part of Mike Pace's rule of law program, which we will be doing more of as the year goes on, or whether it's the modified program that we have put together for the diversity program, where we try and roll in standards of learning with rule of law, or whether it's my girlfriend who calls me up from church and she says, I'm getting together a group of girls and my program is called Fabulosity and I want you to show up. And it's when I walk into that room, and especially if my focus is going to be the law, I'll tell them, purely selfish motive for being here because I love the law. And I'm hoping that something that I will say to you today, this is my conversation with those young people, will encourage you to love the law as well. And if it doesn't encourage them to love the law, one of the other things that I find when I walk into that room is that there are children there who may not grow to love the law, but who at the point when I walk into the room, they have a basic distrust of the law. Because their only encounter with the law may not be a justice of the Supreme Court, or a law student who is enjoying his or her experience, or an attorney who is enjoying the work that they do helping other people. But often when we walk into those rooms, the experiences that those young people have had has been standing in the courtroom while some lawyer is telling some judge that the beloved father that they love spending weekends with them should no longer spend weekends with them in a custody case. And they may walk away not understanding how or why that happened. Or their experience may be, and it's amazing, the truthfulness of young people, because when we walk into the room, they want to tell us, well, yes, my cousin was arrested last week, or yes, my daddy's serving time. And so their experience with the profession that we love so well has not necessarily been a positive experience. And so I want, and I think it's necessary, that if we want to increase the meaningful diversity in our beloved profession, then I think we need to start it at a younger age, when we can dispel the notion that the law is this thing that's operating in on them, and each encounter that they have with the law leaves them with a bad taste in their mouth, and an increasingly bad taste in their mouth, the more encounters that they have. And so my first love, as I said, is to talk to the young people about the legal profession and about the noble profession that it is and the wonderful things that the law does, and to share with them that although they may view the law with skepticism, that the law does apply equally to me. It does apply equally to Mike. It applies to the professor as it does to them. And so while their encounter with the law may not have seemed to have been fair or positive, that their encounter with the law is the same as my encounter with the law, because the rule of law applies to each of us. And I like to share with them, as their parents have probably told them, that the law is not some foreign thing to which they could never be a part, but that the law is something that if they think about it, and if they should decide to pursue that opportunity, that yes, they too can become a member of this beloved profession. And I'll usually start out talking to them, and I'll ask them, do you have a dream? And I'll get a lukewarm response of yes from maybe a third of the audience. And so I'll ratchet up the volume a little bit, and I'll ask them, do you have a dream? And I may get a half of the audience and not being satisfied with that. I will ask them a third time, do you have a dream? And then the volume is a little higher, and they'll all tell me, well, yes, I do. And so then I start calling them out. Well, what is your dream? And some of them will tell me that they want to be athletes, and some of them will tell me that they want to be teachers. And there are all sorts of dreams within the room. And there are a few of them who want to be lawyers, and because there's a judge standing in front of them, and they are young people and they like to please, and they will say, well, I want to be a judge. And so then I'll ask them, well, do you have a plan? What's your plan for how you want to get there? And they don't realize it, but in the questioning, I'm setting them up and hopefully making them think that, first of all, they should have a dream, And second of all, they should have a plan as to how they want to make that dream become a reality. And so then I start talking to them about the plan. How are you going to get from a school in Blackwell, or a school in rural Southside, Virginia, or a school in Southwest Virginia, or even a school in Northern Virginia? How are you going to get from point A to point B? And hopefully I can get them to start thinking about it. And again, my motive is selfish, because I want them to realize that, with the exception of a few people, you don't just wake up one day and decide you're going to go to law school, and it happens and it becomes a meaningful reality. And I tell them that if you start planning now from your seat in third grade or fourth grade and fifth grade, then you can make this dream a reality. And though they may come from different backgrounds, and our goal is to reach out to those who come from different backgrounds. And when we started this project, we had some folks who said to us that our objective was to just do a racial headcount. That we had a letter from a young man who, speaking, I think, from wounds of the past, said to us that what we were designing to do with this conference was to hang out a sign that said, "No whites need apply." And we've worked very hard to dispel that notion, because that's not what this conference is about. But this conference is about saying to everyone who wants to come to the legal table and to have a seat at that table that we recognize and we want to make room for everyone who wants to come. And we want to make room, again, because we're purely selfish people, because we know that the more people we get at the table from the different backgrounds, from the different nationalities, from the different areas of the country, that the richer the product will be. And Justice Goodwin is going to talk with you on Saturday, I think, about the importance of diversity in the judiciary. So I'm not going to go down that path, but I am going to tell you that our objective is to bring everyone to the table who wants to come. And we can do that, and we can only do that. I'm sorry, I think we can only do that by starting when they're young. And so I follow up with those young people by telling them that you really can do and you really can be whatever you want to be. It's going to take some hard work on your part. It's going to take some forethought, and it's going to take some planning. And as a point of example, they're looking at me and they're thinking, "Well, you don't know my history, you don't know my background, you don't know anything about me. How is it that you can stand there and so self-assuredly tell me that I can do this law school thing, that I can be a lawyer, that I can be a judge, that I can be whatever I want to be?" And so that's when I start telling them my story. And I make it very personal. And sometimes it's lost on the younger children, but I'm hoping that I'm planting a seed that they will carry with them, and that when they need it most, they'll be able to remember, "Well, wait a minute. Justice Cleo Powell, sitting on the Supreme Court of Virginia, what did she tell me about her story?" And so I start telling them the story that my cousin told me, and some of you, I'll tell you, I am pretty much a one-trick pony. I tell the same story over and over. I just sort of change it around. So some of you have heard this story, but I start out telling them the story that my cousin Grady told me and that some of you heard at my investiture last week. And that's about a trip. I went on the bench 18 years ago, and so that's about a trip that Grady made. Grady is our family historian, and Grady made a trip 18 years ago when I went on the bench to a rural country road out in Brunswick County, which is where I'm from. And Grady made his way to an overgrown graveyard, and he went to the headstone that bears the name James Powell. It's reported that James Powell was born about 1853, and James Powell was owned by another man named Robert Mark Moore. Robert Mark Moore was a slave owner in Brunswick County. That headstone bears the name of James Powell, and Grady went to that headstone and he wanted to tell James about his great-great-granddaughter, who at that time was a judge in Colonial Heights, Virginia. And I imagine that Grady probably went back sometime since July and told James again about the sign that now hangs in the Supreme Court of Virginia outside of my chambers, and that sign has a title of Justice Powell. And I think that Grady was probably telling James as the wind was blowing through the leaves about this great-great-granddaughter who had somehow come from a history of a slave-owned great-great-grandfather and ended up on the Supreme Court of Virginia. And so this is what I like to tell these young people, and I even like to bring it forward, and I like to tell them, there is nothing special about me sitting, about me. There is something hugely special about me sitting on the Supreme Court. There's nothing special about me because I came from rural Southside Virginia, and this is what I'm telling them. And most of them have no idea where rural Southside Virginia is. And so if there's a map, there is a tiny little postage stamp place called Antioch on that map, and I will show them where that is. And, you know, they're living in Richmond, they're living in Chesterfield, they're living in wherever. And I'm talking to them about rural Southside Virginia. And I'll tell them, and my father was in seventh grade when he had to drop out of school to help support the family because his parents had both predeceased him early. They were living with an aunt and an uncle. There were several children, and so in seventh grade, he had to drop out of school to help support the family. My mother dropped out of school in 10th grade. They married at the ages of 16 and 19, and they had six children. And we lived in a four-room house out in Brunswick County. And when I started school, schools were segregated. And until fourth grade, I went to a segregated elementary school. And so I'm telling these young people this to let them know that you can be whatever you want to be, and you can't let your background define you. And I received a wonderful education in Brunswick County as far as segregated schools went. The teachers were engaged, they were engaging, and I think they recognized within me something that they wanted to cultivate. And when I'm asking these young people, what do you want to be? It's because I really don't recall anyone ever asking me, what did I want to be when I grew up? I think conventional wisdom would say that she was the daughter of two teenage parents. She lived in rural county. The only professionals that I knew were educators and preachers. My father worked in a factory. My mother stayed home until I went to first grade. And so conventional wisdom would say that you do that thing that you know. And so, educator, preacher, homemaker, factory worker. I don't recall anyone asking me, what do you want to be when you grow up? But I was a pretty good student, and so I'm thinking they had some expectations of me, although they were not voiced, and their expectations of me somehow got into my spirit. And so I had expectations of me, but I didn't know for what. And so at 13 years old, I met a man. I know what you're thinking. And I meant for you to think that. One of my teachers wanted some of her students to go down and talk with the gentleman about some classes she wanted to teach. And so we went and we talked to this gentleman, and he was kind, and he was smart, and he was engaging, and he listened to what five 13-year-olds had to tell him about why this thing was important to us. And so for 20 minutes one day, I spent time with this gentleman. We were sitting in the office of Sam Tucker. Sam Tucker, as some of you may know from your history, was one of the civil rights lawyers, prominent civil rights lawyers in Virginia at that time. And so at 13 years of age, with a 20-minute encounter, I decided that I was going to be a lawyer, because if this is what lawyers did, if this is how lawyers drew people in, if this is how comfortable lawyers made 13-year-olds feel, made them feel as if what they said was important and it mattered to him, then I wanted to be a part of that, and I wanted to do that thing. But mine was a curious journey, because you would think if I thought I wanted to be a lawyer, then I would have started making plans to make that happen. One would think. Didn't know any lawyers, met one lawyer in my life, and didn't have the presence of mind to engage with any other lawyers. And I'm sure there must have been more than one lawyer in the Brunswick County area at that time. As a matter of fact, I can probably think of at least two others, but didn't have the presence of mind. And of course, we all know that the thing with which you are familiar informs the things that you do. And so if you want to be a lawyer, most folks would have presence of mind to go and hang out with lawyers. Most folks would have presence of mind to go and sit in the courtroom to see what it is that these lawyers do with all of that book learning, as my mother would say, with all of that education. What do they do? And it wasn't as if I could watch Law and Order on TV, because for a number of years we didn't have a TV. And then when we did get a TV, the only thing that was on was Gunsmoke, Paladin, and wrestling. So I guess I could have been a gunslinger, or I could have turned into a wrestler. But the point is that until I entered law school, the summer before I entered law school, I'd never spent any significant time with lawyers. And so when I go to talk to the young people and I'm asking them about these plans, I'm sharing all of that with them. And I'm thinking my background, and I want them to think my background, my short-sightedness and not making any preparation. And let me tell you, for me, working hard and getting good grades, in my mind, that was preparation. Because I thought if I work hard at the task at hand, then everything else will fall into place. And so I thought I was preparing. And it didn't dawn on me until years later, all of the things that I could have done to make this UVA experience less intimidating. Because coming from Brunswick County to the undergrad here at UVA, where there were students who came from prep schools and students who came from all sorts of places that I had never even contemplated coming from Brunswick County. And every morning I would wake up and I would have to go to that class with 300 students in the psych class, and it was almost like being in a daze. It was like being in a daze. For my first 2 years here, I was wondering, what in the world have I done? And so when I finally got the hang of it, then I come over to the law school, where you all know they speak a different language, a language with which I was not familiar. They engage in a different form of learning. And not that you all, some of you probably were familiar because you had more presence of mind than I did. And so when I talk to these young people, I tell them all of that, to tell them while I was prepared, I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared for UVA undergrad. I wasn't prepared for UVA law school. And so my message to them is this, and my message to you is this. If I knew then what I know now, if I knew then that if I take the SAT test more than once, I can improve my scores and the schools would take the scores. And so I may have come to the university not as a merit semifinalist, but as a national merit scholar, perhaps. If I had known then that there were students who prior to fifth grade, they had books that didn't have the markings of the five students who had gone before them and their thoughts and their ideas all in the margins and books that had all of their pages. If I knew then what I know now. If I knew then that there were lawyers out there who would say to even an elementary, a middle school, a high school student, come and shadow me in my office and see what I do. If I knew then that I should volunteer my time at a law office so that I could get hands-on experience as to what lawyers do before I walked into UVA's law school. If I knew then, as I know now. And so I engage these young people and I tell them the things that I know now that I didn't know then. And I think of all the things that I didn't know and all of the things that I didn't do, and there's a sign outside of the Supreme Court that says Justice Powell, if I knew then what I knew now, And so I engage them and I tell them, go and shadow someone. Let me pick up the phone and call my friend and ask them if you can come down to court and sit with them. I meet with them and I tell them, here is my card. Because we're not going to make this just a one-time encounter, you and I. But I want you to stay in touch with me. And so when she got to law school, she called me on the first week of exams and she said, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing here. And so I talked her down off the ledge. And when she got to Howard's Law School and she texted me and she said, this is much harder than I thought. And I said, that's okay because you can do it. And so I engage them at a young age. And the ones that I engage at a later age, I follow through with them and I tell them, call me. I can put you in touch with some lawyers. I can bring you in and we can talk about whatever it is that you're finding difficult, that you are finding strange. Because you can do this and you can be better prepared to do this than some of us who have gone before you and have still managed to make it through. And so what I know now is that the pipeline is rich with young people who need some direction. What I know now is that we each have lessons that we have learned along the way, whether we're in law school or whether we are practicing or whether we're professors or deans, we have lessons that we've learned along the way. And some of the things that we would think, well, she should have thought of that. She wanted to be a lawyer, she should have thought. But when you're in the day-to-day business of trying to make it through, some things you just don't think of. When your background is X and where you want to go is Y, you can't necessarily think of the steps that will make a difference in your getting there. And so what I know now, one of the things that kept me distracted was we used to have to go into the woods with Daddy and cut the wood for the wood-burning stove and the cooking stove. And when it would snow, Daddy would walk in front of us and he would make this path in the snow so that we could walk behind him and it would be easier for us to walk. And so what I know now is that some of us have walked that path in the snow. And so we need to bring along some young person who doesn't really know what it is to make it from point A to point B. And we need to allow them to walk in the path in the snow that we have already carved out. What I know now is that there are young people out there in Brunswick County, Virginia, and Southwest Virginia, and Northern Virginia, and in Tidewater, who have the skills and the ability and a great gift that they can bring to this profession that we love so well. What I know now is that we have the ability to find those young people. We go back to the places where we live and where we work, and we extend to them the offer of, do you have a dream? Do you have a means of getting there? And do you have a plan? And if not, then let me help you. And it may be that they don't want to be lawyers, but they still have a dream. And we still have knowledge that we can share. When I went to my investiture last week, I told all of my friends, I said, bring your daughters, bring your sons, because I want them to see this. I want them to see that they can be whatever they want to be, because I am what I want to be. From where I came from, I am where I want to be. And one of my friends wrote this in her journal. She's 8 years old, and I told her, Mom, I wanted to share this with you. Because we impress upon young people by the things that we do. And so by talking to them and sharing with them, we will impress upon them by the things that we do. And so she wrote this. She wrote Cleo Powell. Her story is amazing, but it still comes from a small town. She was a justice in four courts. She is a great woman. Thank you, Kylie. She was once a girl like me, and she's all grown now. I'm talking about a big, big day for Virginia. She's the first African-American woman Supreme Court justice or judge. I went there. It had all the justices that had served in one picture each, and they were all white men. This was before they hung the five new justices. History has a burn, but good comes. I'm trying to read her writing. Good things are happening. I felt proud of Cleo, and one more step for history. That's from an 8-year-old who attended my investiture. There are children out there who can bring a richness to our profession that we have never envisioned. There are children out there who can benefit from the things that we know now, that if we had only known then, we would be better lawyers, we would be better judges, we would be better law students. But they can be better. And in them becoming better, we too will be better. And so this whole notion of bringing greater diversity to the legal profession can only be a good thing for the legal profession. The different ideas, the different backgrounds, the different notions, the different ways of thinking. Because when you get all seven of the justices on the bench, and you've got my friend Elizabeth from Southwest Virginia, and you've got me from Southside Virginia, and you've got Bill Mims from Northern Virginia, and then you've got all the others in between. What a wonderful session of sharing that we have, and we come from different perspectives because of the different backgrounds, and hopefully the people of Virginia are better off because of that. And so these young people are out there. And when I go back, I'm going to give my cards to some more of them. I'm going to W&L when I leave here on Saturday, and I have a bag full of cards. I encourage you to do the same. The things that you've learned along the way. There's a billboard at a church on my way home every day, and I read that billboard, and it says that a candle loses nothing by lighting another candle. I encourage you to light another candle. Thank you.